Yeah, here, sorry.
Small number of people, but it's a large rooms.
Yeah, okay.
And the camera is in the back.
Right.
Well, the camera is in the back, so.
Right.
Would be better if you.
I should speak a little louder. Maybe I. So let me start with giving a plausible, I won't say necessarily, in fact, successful, but a plausible way that one might try to get an invariant of grades. So, so the grade group. Bn, being the grades on n strands, is generated by basically two types of generators. We have positive crossings, and since we're dealing with n strand grades, the crossing could happen anywhere among those n strands, and so we'll call this the braid Bi, I plus 1, if this is strand I and this is strand I plus 1. And then there's sort of the negative crossing, which would be, so if this is strand I and this is strand I plus 1, then we call this I, the braid I plus 1 inverse. And then there are two types of relations. So bearing in mind that we're talking about braids, so there's two types of relations, the Reihenmeister 2 and 3 move, where, so Reihenmeister 2 basically says that each of these is invertible. In other words, if you compose this braid with this braid, this is what I was calling Bi, I plus 1. Well, if I'm going upwards, then it's I plus 1, comma, I inverse Bi, I plus 1. And that has to be equal to the identity. So this is the Reihenmeister 2 move. This identity braid has to be equal to this. And then Reihenmeister 3 is the following, as you know. So if you do this combination of braids, if you move this crossing past these two crossings, the result should be the same. So we write that as follows. That is Reihenmeister 3. And so let me just, so one strategy for finding an invariant of braids would be to see if we can associate to these generators values in some suitable space such that those values satisfy these relations. So using the generators and relations aspect of the grade group. And in that regard, let me recall for you.
Peter. I think, strictly speaking, you have some combinatorial difficulties.
Maybe.
Because, at least from the way you wrote the identity at the bottom, the Reihenmeister 2, BI sort of switching the roles of.
Yeah.
I plus 1 and I, it means it's as if the strands have identities.
That is correct.
And if the strands have identities, the real meaning of it is that you cannot connect, you cannot compose braids unless the identities match.
Yeah.
In which case, you're not talking about the braid group, but about a certain braid category whose objects are enumerations of identities of strands. And so really you're not talking about the braid group here. Or else your notation is not what you really meant.
I don't want to get overly bogged down in technicalities because this is more motivation.
Yes.
So we can call this sigma I sigma I inverse. Okay, so it's a point well taken, but it's not really.
Yeah, no, I.
Too simple. So thanks.
I just don't know how far you were going to take it.
Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. So let me recall. So here's going to be the candidate space that we will try and assign values to these things in. Namely, what I'll call AN, and this is the linear space of chord diagrams on N vertical strands. Like so, subject to the four-term relation, and so this I can write in a different way. So if my ground field is K, then I can write this as the algebra generated by formal parameters Tij, where the I's and J's are different, but otherwise run between 1 and N, and I factor out the four-term relation. And I don't know if you've seen it expressed in this way, but the four-term relation comes to the following. Tij Tik plus Tjk is equal to 0. Did we see this in class?
I don't think I ever wrote it.
Okay. So the way to see that, at least if ijk are 1, 2, 3, is I think we would have seen this. So we had a notation for this, which was the following trivalent graph. And there may be a plus or a minus here. I don't know if I got the sign right. But this could also be written in the form like so. And again, my signs may be wrong overall. But then comparing this and this, what we get is T12 comma T13 on this side is equal to T, so here I did 23 comma T12. And then if you put everything on the same side, then we get this. So that's the four-term relation expressed in the context of AN. So now let's suppose
so
that
again you're dropping minor things, but like the Tijs are symmetric. Tij is Tji. And also, if you have four different indices, then they commute.
Yes. So I dropped So Tij equals Tji, and Tij Tkl equals zero if the order, if Ij, Kl are four different numbers. So thank you, Jordan. So now the question is, can we somehow assign to crossings elements of this algebra such that these relations would be satisfied? And I will not just ask whether we can find elements of this algebra. I'll include sort of this completed algebra. So I will ask whether one can assign to these crossings some power series within this, of terms in this algebra, satisfying the relations. And specifically, I will actually consider, can we find Bi equals, well, let me just consider the braid on two strands. B equals the following. So firstly, the empty diagram plus the diagram with just one chord and some coefficient, and then plus higher order terms. And then when, and I will, I, what I will want is that I will take the same formal power series, and if I want to find the value of the braid sitting on the I and I plus first strand, then I'll just carry this picture over, or carry this, sort of import this power series onto the relevant strands. So can I find such a B satisfying these relations? And I'm going to skip over Rademeister 2 because I've already kind of made it work, and just look at Rademeister 3. Because, so if I look at Rademeister 3, with this power series, it kind of breaks down into a whole series of graded pieces where the grading is based on the number of chords in each, based on the number of chords. So in degree one, for example, sorry, in degree zero, so this would be the degree zero type piece, this relation, so the braid relation is B12, B13, B23 equals B23, B13, B12. When I multiply out the power series, in degree zero, I'll just get a 1 equals 1. And then in degree 1, I'll just get a sum of linear pieces. The chord on 1, 2, 1, 3. So let me write that out. In degree 0, we just get 1 equals 1. In degree 1, we get T12 plus T13 plus T23 equals T23 plus T13 plus T12. So in other words, 0 equals 0 and no constraint. And then finally, in degree 2, so now we retain degree 2 pieces, and it's basically all the ways of getting degree 2 pieces. We get the following equation, T12, T13, plus T12, T23, plus T13, T23 on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, we get T23, T13 plus T23, T12 plus T13, T12. And I can rewrite this in the following form in terms of commutators.
But you also get a degree two pieces from B.
Plus the degree two pieces from B, sorry. So where is that?
Just the sum of the squares of the degree one piece with a different coefficient. I mean,
sum of the squares. So that's when you multiply a degree two piece by one times one.
Yeah, but we're only looking at degree two.
Oh, okay. Well, but that's how those arise. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you get the degree two piece of B12.
Yes.
On this side, and the degree two piece of B12 here.
Yes.
So do they not cancel?
Oh, so they cancel. Yes, you're right.
Okay.
So, okay.
So they all cancel. And I'm glad to hear that. So if we recollect everything here and write it in terms of commutators, we get T12, T13 plus T23 plus the commutator of T13, T23. And this needs to be equal to zero for this all to work. But now, this here is the four-term relation, which is zero, and so we need this here to be zero. But in general, they will not commute. So this is not in general. There's no reason for that to be zero, because there are chords sitting on different strands. So there's no reason whatsoever for this to be zero. So the bottom line is that, in general, this strategy, as I've written it here, will not work. But nonetheless, we can tweak it so that it does work. And that's largely where we're headed today. So let me explain how the tweaking will broadly work. So recall again that if G is a finite dimensional Lie algebra with a bilinear symmetric add invariant form T, and if an R is a finite dimensional representation of G, then for defining this map or this language, then we can associate so, in any chord diagram, whenever we see dotted lines, we associated to that a tensor either T, which we think of as being a tensor in G star tensor G star, or T inverse, which we thought of as being a tensor in G tensor G. And then for every oriented solid line, we associated to that the identity element in the endomorphisms of R, so just the identity element on the representation on this vector space. And then when we saw pieces of picture like this with the dotted line ending up on a solid line, we thought of that as being a tensor little r sitting inside G star tensor r. So we think of an element of the Lie algebra coming in here and acting on the representation, and then the output is another element of the representation. And so we express that as being a tensor of this form. And then using this coding, we could translate chord diagrams into elements of a big tensor product of the Lie algebra, or multiple copies of the Lie algebra, and multiple copies of the representation. So let me express that over right there over here. We can think of diagrams in AN as elements of the universal enveloping algebra G with n tensor copies acting on the representation R tensor with itself R times. N times. And so what motivates what we will be doing today is that in order to find an invariant of braids, one could look for invariants which take values in tensor powers of representations of UG and see if it works. So the specific approach we took here didn't work, but this strategy actually is successful if done properly. So that's the motivation for what we will do today, which is looking at the representation theory of tensor powers of the Lie algebra and developing some of their properties. So is there any questions about this for now? This is kind of the motivation, but before I start getting technical. Okay, so start as always with the definition. If G is a Lie algebra, and at this point I just say any Lie algebra, we define a category rep UG of UG modules rep UG whose objects are UG modules and whose morphisms are intertwining isomorphisms. So, intertwining isomorphisms between modules. So I won't verify formally that this all works. It's fairly straightforward. And let me just skip on to the following observation. If V1 and V2 are UG modules, so are in rep UG, then we have a concept of how the Lie algebra G can act on their tensor power. So we can G in the Lie algebra G acts on V1 tensor V2 as a derivation. In other words, if little vi are in big vi, then the action of G on their tensor product is G acting on V1 tensor V2 plus V1 tensor with G acting on V2. But a different way of writing that would be to say that it is this element G tensor 1 plus 1 tensor G acting on the tensor product of V1 and V2, where this is some element in G tensor G. So this action of G as a derivation induces a map which we'll call delta from G to UG tensor UG, which is defined on Lie algebra elements exactly by this. So far, it's just a map, but we will explore its properties. So just to re-emphasize this, the action of G on the tensor product of V1 and V2 is given by delta of G acting on V1 tensor V2, where corresponding components of this twofold tensor product act on the respective component over here. Now, so far, we've only talked about G being in the Lie algebra, but suppose we have two elements, G1 and G2, which are in the Lie algebra, and we'd like to know how it acts on the tensor product of V1 and V2. Well, we want this action to be a representation, so we need and impose that G1, G2 acting on the tensor product of V1 and V2, that must be equal to G1 acting on the action of G2 on B1 tensor B2. And if we expand that out, that's G1 acting on, so here we get G2 B1 tensor B2 plus B1 tensor G2 B2. And now we can have G1 acting here. So we get G1 G2 B1 tensor B2 plus G1 B1 tensor G2 B2 plus, so now G1 will act on the second components and we get G2 B1 tensor G1 B2 plus B1 tensor G1 G2 B2. Okay? And now, just as we did before, we can pull out in front an element of the double tensor product of G acting on B1, B2. So we write this as G1, G2, tensor 1, plus G1, tensor G2, plus G2, tensor G1, plus 1, tensor G1, G2. And all of this is acting on B1 tensor B2. And this here, it is readily seen, I think, to be just the product of delta G1 and delta G2, and all of this acting on B1 tensor B2. So if we just impose the requirement that the representation that we're dealing with is a UG representation and so satisfies this, then we've reached the conclusion that our map delta has to have this multiplicativity property. So delta must satisfy delta G1, G2 equals delta G1, delta G2. Or to put it differently, it needs to be an algebra map. Okay? So that's that point. Next point. Okay, one little fairly minor point is that modules have an underlying vector space. So in particular, if 1 is the identity element of the ground field, and if B is an element of some module in rep UG, then, trivially we can write V is equal to 1 times V, but we can think of this in many different ways. So V itself is an element of big V, but we can think of this as being an element of K tensor V, where we identify that with V in the obvious way, just by multiplying. But we can think of 1 as sitting inside UG, so we can also think of 1 times V as sitting inside UG tensor V. And we want all of these interpretations to be consistent. So if we denote by iota the inclusion of K into UG, then we need a commutative diagram, which is the following. K tensor V includes into UG tensor V, and both of these by multiplication map down to V, And we need this triangle to commute. So we need all of these interpretations to be consistent. So another point, which is kind of dual to that one, is the following, that there is a trivial representation, by which I mean a representation on which all elements of G act as zero, but elements of the ground field just act as multiplication. So this is really dually. We have a trivial representation, which I'll call T, and I'll think of it as K acting on some vector tau, with the property that G acting on tau is zero if G is in Lie algebra G, and G acting on tau, well, 1 acting on tau is equal to tau, where 1 is the identity of K. And an equivalent way of saying this, so equivalently, we have, in fact, an algebra map, which I'll call epsilon, from A to the ground field, which takes the following values. So epsilon of G is 0 if G is in the Lie algebra, and epsilon of the identity of the ground field is just 1. And then this is an algebra map, so epsilon acting on elements of UG would be generally 0, unless it was just 1. So this is an algebra map, and we have the following commutative diagram. K answered with T. UG answered with T. So this map here is epsilon tensor identity. So you kill off any sort of positive powers in here, and you get a map onto K tensor T. And then by multiplication, we go down to the trivial representation, and this diagram has to commute. So. And it's kind of a dual version of what the triangle that I wrote over here. Okay. Now a more substantive point, which is, so far I've only talked about twofold tensor powers products of representations, but what if G is going to act on a threefold tensor product? So consider the action of G and G on some threefold tensor power. And the issue that I want to address here is that there's two ways of writing this tensor power. I could have parenthesized differently. But let's consider this particular parenthesization. And actually, I can have G being in the universal enveloping algebra. So, and let me write delta of G as a sum over I of GI1 tensor GI2. Then when G acts on an element in here, so let VI be in big VI, then G acting on V1, tensor V2, tensor V3 is given by delta G, so it's given by the following formula. GI1 acting on V1 tensor V2 tensored with GI2 acting on V3. But now the GI1s are elements of UG, and they're acting on a tensor product in turn. So this would become the sum over I, and now I need to take delta GI1 acting on V1 tensor V2 and tensored with GI2 acting on V3. So the point that I'm trying to make is that delta of G acting on V1 tensor V2 tensor V3, as you can see through this derivation, it is really delta tensored with the identity circled with delta acting on G, and all of this acting on V1 tensor V2. And now if I had parenthesized things the other way, then I'd get a different expression here. So if I parenthesize the other way, also, G acting on V1 tensor V2 tensor V3, with the parentheses here, this would be identity tensor delta, circled with delta, acting on G, and all of this acting on V2 tensor V3. And we would like these to be equal. So we would like these actions to be the same. So now we would like them to be the same. But now let's go back to what we do know about how delta acts. So if delta is now acting on G in the actual Lie algebra as opposed to its universal enveloping algebra, then we can check that we have equality of these two formulas. So delta identity circled delta of G is going to be delta identity of G tensor 1 plus 1 tensor G. And now we have delta acting on the first component in each case. And so we get, so for here, we get G tensor 1 tensor 1 plus 1 tensor G tensor 1 plus, and then I have delta acting on 1 tensor G. And something that I forgot to say over here, with regard to all this point, again, we want the identity element of the ground field K to just, in a sense, be absorbed into vectors that it's acting on. So in particular, we need to have that, so one acting on a tensor product of vectors needs to be just the same vector back again. And so it follows that we need to have delta 1 equal to 1 tensor 1. That is what we need in order for this relation to be true. So this tells us how delta acts on the ground field, and that's the final piece that we were missing. Namely here, we can replace this by 1 tensor 1 tensor G. And so this is the result of applying delta identity, circle delta. But it's fairly clear, I think, that if we had done it the other way around, we would have gotten the same thing. So similarly, for identity delta, circle delta of G, and so we have, at least for elements of the Lie algebra, that delta tensor identity, circle delta, is equal to identity tensor delta, circle delta. But then this will extend readily to elements of the universal enveloping algebra. And the upshot of that is the following. So I haven't actually proved it, but it's, I think, easy to work out that the same identity will hold true for G in the universal enveloping algebra. So I'll just leave that. So this is true. So if I put a G here, for all G in the universal enveloping algebra.
Just multiplicativity.
Yeah. This multiplicativity. So now we want to relate this back into a statement about the tensor products of the representations. So we use the fact that we can identify the underlying vector spaces. So V1 tensor V2 tensor V3. We can identify this with V1 tensor V2 tensor V3. And so the result is that if we now consider these tensor products as modules, so this is as vector spaces, since the vector spaces are identifiable and the action of G on them is the same, it follows that as modules they are identical. We can identify them as well. So now using the fact that we can identify them, we can also identify these spaces as modules, as UG modules. And this is what's known as co-associativity. Co-associativity. Of modules, which is just
associativity of
modules.
Co-associativity of the bracket.
Associativity.
Of the delta.
Well, yeah, it's co-associativity of delta and associativity of delta. Okay, so using this example of UG, I've written out the properties that the universal enveloping algebra has, which allow one to have an action of UG on tensor products of representations as opposed to just representations. And so that leads into the following definition.
So Peter, it's 10:02. Should we take a break or?
I would. I would suggest writing this definition down.
Okay.
So from that, we make the following definition. in which we will collect together the properties that we would like in an algebra that will ensure that its representations, that we can tensor together their representations. So we define a bi-algebra K over a field K to be a bi-algebra over field K is a K-algebra together with linear maps delta from A to A tensor A and epsilon from A to the ground field and this we call the coproduct and this we call the co-unit satisfying the following. So such that firstly delta is co-associative in the sense that in the sense of this. Secondly, epsilon tensor identity delta is equal to the identity, which is also equal to identity epsilon circle delta. So I didn't explicitly derive that, but that corresponds to the fact that we have if G is acting on T tensor V, where G is the trivial representation, then this is G acting on T tensor V plus T tensor G acting on V. So if G is in the well, so this is, I'm explaining what this means in the context of the Lie algebra. So if A happens to be a universal enveloping algebra, this is how we interpret it. I'm just trying to explain why we need this relation. So G acting on T tensor V would be the following, and then G acting on the trivial representation will just give 0 tensor V. And here we have T tensor G of V. And we see that this is just epsilon tensor with the identity, circle delta of G, acting on T tensor V. Because when you delta out the G, and then act on it by this, you get exactly this piece here. So that's the motivation for having this requirement. And then there's two more requirements. Three, delta is an algebra homomorphism particular to explain how to view A tensor A as an algebra. So A tensor A is viewed as an algebra via, so the product of A tensor B times A prime tensor B prime is kind of the obvious thing, A prime tensor B B prime. And the final condition is that epsilon is an algebra homomorphism. Epsilon AB equals zero, if, which is the same thing as epsilon AB being zero if either A is in G. So this is in the context, again, if we interpret all of this in terms of UG, epsilon AB equals zero if either A is in G or B is in G. So that is the definition of a bialgebra. And then in the second half, we will define a category of representations of a bialgebra and go from there. So let's